Anya looked around the expanse of the Ryokan Rural Inn.
Nice place.
Yes, these places are what I love best about traveling out of the city. You'll find old-world charm in people who still strive to keep tradition alive in spite of the onslaught of technological advances.
Sounds like you've made that speech before.
Never. I'll get us checked in.
Hold it.
What?
We're walking on gravel.
And?
And you're not making any noise.
Oh, sorry.
I don't suppose you give out free lessons on exactly how you're doing that.
I keep my knees bent. And my footsteps are much closer together. A short stride.
Is that it?
My feet also don't lift and stomp down on the rocks. They roll over them. It's a sort of rolling footwork that compacts the stones together before too much weight is applied and causes the action to make a lot of noise. It does take a great deal of practice. And leaves are even tougher.
Swell.
Maybe you can get some gravel installed at your apartment in Brooklyn.
Now there's a thought. A bad one, but it's a thought nonetheless.
I'll go ahead and check us in while you practice.
Bend my knees. Ugh, damn it.
Anya slept, enveloped by the warmth of the bedding on the tatami mat floor. A lone fountain in the rear of the ryokan bubbled over stones, dribbling down a meandering waterfall. She breathed deeply, dreaming of perfect peace and quiet, lulled into a state of complete relaxation by the sake and exhaustion. Somewhere in the vagueness of nocturnal time, Anya's subconscious noticed something. A brief glimpse of disharmony spotlighted against the backdrop of natural rhythm. Ken's hand suddenly snaked over her mouth.
Stay still.
She came awake immediately, wanting to fight him off. So this was it. What Garin had tried to warn her about. That Ken was an evil man after all. He'd wanted her along on this trip for some reason, only to now spring a deadly trap on her. She would die in this rural inn in a country not her own. Her limbs were pinned. Ken knew how to keep her from moving.
They're outside. Stay still.
Ken let her go, and as she turned over slowly, he pointed toward the shoji screens. Anya could see nothing beyond their opaque paper. Certainly there were no shadows cast against them, like in some bad Hollywood movie. But Ken seemed insistent. He let his other hand move toward his backpack. From within, he withdrew a small pistol with a sound suppressor attached to it. Ken brought himself into a seated position with the gun held at the ready. His breathing had deepened rather than shallowed like Anya's had. He looked firm and resolute, committed to using the gun. Anya closed her own eyes and saw the sword where she needed it to be in case things went to hell. She opened her eyes and saw Ken looking at her. He barely nodded. Anya nodded back. Ken pivoted towards the back wall.
How did you...
Shh!
Ken padded to the door. He ducked low and peeked around the corner, then dove backwards.
Oh.
Anya looked to the wall. A throwing star blackened in soot was jammed in.
Whatever you've got access to, now would be a good time to bring it out.
Anya closed her eyes and reached for the sword. She saw herself closing her hands around the hilt. The walls of their room exploded as figures leaped into the room. Anya jerked her eyes open to see a black-clad man swing his sword towards her.
Ken, who are the...
Ken maneuvered to try to get closer to Anya. She rolled to her feet and came up with her sword held vertically in front of her. Another attacker materialized from outside, stepping calmly into the fray. He sized up Anya and her sword. He brought his hands up. The links wrapped around Anya's hand. The invader jerked his hand back, and Anya felt one of her hands come away from the hilt of her sword. Rather than try to fight, she inexplicably went with the energy of the attacker's pull and turned her body, cutting straight down with her sword. The assailant's arm fell to the wood.
How many are there?
I'm out!
Two more attackers flew into the room, each armed with katana. Anya saw the curved swords gleaming in the vague moonlight. Their breathing misted the room as the cooler outside temperatures mingled with the warmth of the ryokan.
Ken, I might need some help here.
I'm a little busy.
Anya's attackers spread out in a vague arc in front of her. One of them dropped his lead foot back and drew his sword high above his head. The other dropped the tip of his low, aimed almost at her foot. Anya kept her sword held vertically in front of herself. All she could do was wait. From where he held his sword high above himself, the attacker on her left cut down straight at her head. Anya felt her body jerk itself to the left, dodging to the outside of his cut. She realized they wanted her to dodge to the inside, where the second attacker would have easily cut up and into her. Instead, Anya spun and then cut back down above the attacker's arms. Anya had cut back up, catching her attacker in the throat. The second attacker regarded her coolly now. He knew she was no amateur. Another body rolled off to the side, his head at an odd angle. Ken had taken out another attacker. But Anya couldn't afford to concentrate on him right now. Not when the second swordsman looked as if he was ready to kill her for all the death Anya had managed to wreak on the invaders. He circled her, and Anya moved with him. The room was tight, but somewhat maneuverable, as long as she didn't lift her sword high overhead. She had to watch her footing, though. More and more bodies littered the room, and she could easily fall or trip on any of them. The blood on the floor also made things slippery. The second swordsman kept her between himself and Ken. Anya frowned. He knew how to use the environment to his advantage. Smart. She started moving the other way, trying to position him between her and Ken. But he changed his posture and stance with the sword. If she tried to continue to do so, he'd be able to cut her badly and possibly kill her. Ken must have polished off his third attacker. Anya could see something in the eyes of her attacker. He was furious that Anya had killed his partner, but he must have also seen that he was now alone. And it would soon be two against one. Not two amateurs, he would have realized, but two very competent fighters. He moved, his blade slicing up from the lower right. The man was fast. He wasn't leaving himself open.
Anya!
Ken's voice reminded her she wasn't alone. It must have also reminded her attacker, who suddenly backed away. For another long second, he stood silhouetted in the gaping hole in the wall, and then in a flash, he was gone.
We've got to go.
No.
No? Why not? We've got to get him.
That may be exactly what he wants. He may be waiting out there for you to come through that hole and go after him. He'll cut you down easily then.
So what now?
We wait.
For what?
Morning.
Anya slumped to the floor, leaning on the heavy sword blade. Ken squatted next to her.
You did amazingly well.
Thanks.
I must confess, I knew you had some secrets, but this is not what I was expecting.
It's a long story.
Fair enough. You can tell me later, okay?
Maybe.
Ken stood and walked to one of the corpses. He rolled him over and started searching him.
You hoping to find something?
Yes. I'd like to know who they were.
Aren't they ninja?
These were no ninja. They had no skills in ninjutsu, just bad imitators dressed in cheap clothing and using crummy weapons. You see that shuriken?
The one in the door. What about it?
You see how many points it has? That's what they sell in Hong Kong flea markets. That's not a legitimate Japanese shuriken. No identification on this one.
He checked the other bodies, but found nothing.
Well, it seems they were smart enough to know not to have any identifying features on them in case things went wrong.
Just makes this all the stranger.
You did say that we were bound to attract the attention of other interested parties, and that some of those parties might not want us to find the Vajra.
Yes, I did.
Surely this proves your theory out.
I just wish it didn't. We've already got enough troubles as it is on this jaunt.
More attackers?
No, I imagine that will be our friendly innkeeper. And boy, is he going to shit when he sees this. Oh, you might want to get rid of that thing before he sees it. At least then we can claim self-defense.
Anya nodded and closed her eyes.
Wow.
The innkeeper appeared at what used to be their door.
Who told you to attack them?
Nezuma paused as he listened to the voice on the telephone. After a moment, he frowned.
Of course I know you don't report to me, but I thought we had an understanding that...
The voice on the other end of the phone cut him off again. Nezuma closed his eyes and listened to the venom coming at him, vowing that he would very soon see this particular mission finished.
Fine. Good day.
He clicked the phone off and turned to look at Shuko, who sat quietly eating some fruit on the tatami mats.
I swear, they are the biggest fools on the planet.
Shuko said nothing but only looked up at him expectantly. Nizuma frowned.
They attacked Kenichi and the woman last night in the ryokan.
Why?
I have no idea, except that his young guns wanted vengeance for what Kenichi did to them back in Tokyo. It was a silly move and probably drew a great deal of unwanted attention to us. It also put them more on guard than they have been so far.
So now they know.
They've known for sure that they have people watching them, but a full-scale attack in the middle of the night, that borders on insane. Shuko.
Master?
I did not want to do what I had to do last night. I hope you understand that.
I understand.
We are so close right now to finally gaining what we have been after.
What you've been after.
This isn't just about me. It's about what the Dorje can do for both of us.
I've never cared about that.
What do you mean?
I only care about what it can do for you, Master. What it means to you. The value and glory you see in its recovery means more to me than the item itself.
But it will give us the life we've always dreamed of.
But don't you see? I already have the life I've always dreamed of. You gave that to me years ago when you plucked me out of that slum. And every day since then, I've thanked the gods for your appearance in my life.
You know I share your feelings.
Do you?
How can you question me?
Shuko took her hand and pulled at the neck of her kimono. The dark black and blue welts on her skin showed like an angry yoke around her neck, mottling the skin toward her collarbones.
This is not what two people in love do to each other.
Nezuma covered her neck back up.
You know I have a violent temper.
Yes, I know.
And you know that I sometimes do things I don't mean to do.
But I have never experienced any misdirected hatred from you. At least, not until last night.
Yes. Would you prefer to leave?
Would you let me?
You think I would kill you?
Yes.
I suppose you do after last night. You have every right to. But my life would mean nothing without you in it.
Do you mean that? Truly?
Yes.
A small smile formed at the corners of her mouth.
Thank you.
I'm sorry for hurting you.
She hugged him tightly, pressing her sobs into the folds of his robe. She shuddered and convulsed as he held on to her. When she was done, Nezuma could feel the wetness of her tears on his shoulder.
You feel better now?
Yes.
He smoothed her hair back, running his fingers through the dark tresses as she sniffed and attempted to compose herself.
My little beauty.
They lay back on the tatami mats. As he nuzzled her, he thought about the timetable they would need to adhere to in order to pursue Kenichi and Anya Creed. At least they knew where to find them. That was, if they stayed around long enough. Shuko shuddered as he kissed her. Sex would take precious time away from them. He frowned. But it was apparently necessary in order to reassure Shuko that he did truly love her. After all, he needed her badly by his side during the coming battles he felt sure would take place. And afterward? He smiled as Shuko's body tightened and then relaxed under his kisses. Afterward, he could always dispose of her at his leisure.